Once again, hi everybody. This is Side Pocket. We are back from the dead. We are not. We have de-chipmunked ourselves. I mean, they're cute. We like them, but they can't speak for us. So this is now a chipmunk-free zone. Thank you for putting up with the technical difficulties all day. Thank you for letting us know. And we are now should be in the clear. And we have a very interesting talk here. Now, it's fascinating because originally, and I'm going to spoil it here, originally, your slot, before we get into this intro, is originally Aesthetics was supposed to be here. He's one of the people who helps out core staff a lot. Unfortunately, he's stuck in Germany and he couldn't work out the scheduling. There have been legendary IRC battles that happen in IRC on the Pound 2600 between him and my roommate, G.I. Jack. So originally this hour was supposed to be them in this booth doing a final round argument to settle all the arguments. And unfortunately, that didn't pan out. We were going to try for that Hope 2020. However, right after we found out we couldn't do that, this man submitted something where I'm like, I don't care what, I'm putting him on the air because this is awesome. Could you please introduce yourself, sir?
Sure. My name is Fred Jennings. I'm an attorney at Tor Equitable, and my specialty is cybercrime.
This is a little bit closer to the mic. That's all. Yeah.
Closer. All right.
Yeah, there we go. That should be good. Yep. Excellent. And, yes, so, yes, you are going to be covering CFAA. Could you tell us what exactly that is?
Sure, that's perfect. I got our first question just came in over IRC, which was, what the fuck is CFAA and AMA?
Yes, and by the way, it's worth two fucks.
Roughly two fucks. So the CFAA is the main federal computer crime law in the United States. It stands for the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, and it is sort of the primary vehicle for prosecuting what's legally called unauthorized access or unauthorized damage. So, less legally is hacking stuff or breaking stuff.
So you're covering to make sure that we have our rights to be able to break our stuff so we're able to know better.
I'm doing my best. It's a whole mess of a law and the backstory of it, which is a fascinating talk.
So would you say that your work sort of has a good overlap to the right to repair movement?
Mm-hmm. There's similarity in terms of the right to repair legal issues has overlap in that. The problem with the CFAA is this is a law from 1984, before the public internet existed, largely motivated by sort of scary films like War Games, if you remember it, sort of fear-mongering in Congress. Mm-hmm. And it's phrased incredibly broadly. Mm-hmm. So much like the right to repair movement, sort of makers in general have this nascent threat from
Could you move closer to the mic? Yeah, I'm actually
going to
see if I can balance this.
The CFAA is phrased so broadly that the application of the law endangers extremely necessary and important and harmless security research.
Okay, can you just say check again? The mic comes
on. Check.
That's my mic. Try that again?
All right, let's test that now.
Okay. This IRC. Yes, would you be able to try this mic? I know it's kind of weird here, but.
How's that?
Huh, this is interesting. Hold on a moment here. Yeah. Now we're having. So now our new thing is for some reason the mics are not. Huh. Yeah, the mics are not. Actually, so this is how we're going to do it until someone comes over to help us here.
Okay.
So apparently this one is directly running, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to speak, and I'm going to kind of turn it over, and then he's going to speak, and then we'll be able to hear. So, for some reason, this mic is not on. I'm going to just share this one, yeah. Because, like, no one can hear. This one is picking up. None of the other ones are. Yeah, and I've tried the scale here, so. Or oh, shit, they didn't hit the buttons. Oh. Maybe this
is that. Oh, hey.
There
that sounds
go.
Like me.
They're all. Sorry. All
right.
Yeah, and we're going to turn that down a bit here.
Yep. How's that?
Perfect. IR genius.
All right. Yes. Well done. See, good button pressing, everyone.
I'm learning. Thank you, Johnny. Cameo by Johnny Xmas.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for the audio assist.
So for those who couldn't hear yet, yes, I am actually learning. Just one repeat. I'm sorry to make you go through
stuff
again.
No, that's fine. I'll say it again now that people
Friday,
can actually hear me.
Yes. We do our beta testing in production. CFAA, what the hell is that again?
So what the fuck is the CFAA?
Mm-hmm.
Computer Fraud and Abuse Act is what it stands for, and it is the primary federal law that that's used to prosecute hacking, whether that is breaking into a network system or damaging a network system. And this is a dual-use civil and criminal law, so if you're talking about criminal prosecutions as well as civil lawsuits by private companies.
So what sort of abuse they were worried about for such a law to be enacted?
So the origin story of this law is interesting. It's first passed in 1984. This is well before the public internet. And if you go back into the congressional history and sort of the statements people made around the time that it was being pushed through, the concerns were War Games, the film, had just came out. If you've seen it, if you haven't seen it, it involves an early sort of computer system in NORAD that someone breaks
in. It also involves really adorable overacting
and
Russians.
It's a
just like now
classic, campy classic of the sort of hacker community. Great film if you haven't seen it. Not the most, as films tend to be, factually accurate portrayal of the risks of network systems. But it was concerns about nation state or individual hacking into government systems. It was also when you first saw things like network banking systems being used. And in those early days, there was a lot of lobbying from bank and telecom companies who were concerned about not having a legal mechanism to go after people who broke in.
It's kind of crazy that, like, I guess this really shows, like, the limited scope that people have with technology, even technological experts, where that they thought that they would need this law for, like you said, like government espionage, trying to break in and learn stuff. When to me, this law, like for the stuff that you see today, like Hillary's emails, has to me did nothing remotely.
Oh, it barely even comes up in conversation.
And this law could
been one of the big criticisms of it over the years has been, yes, in theory, it's built to protect nation state hacking into government systems. More often than not, this is being used against people who broke in, and it's the crime of curiosity.
Yep.
So you've come in, you've done no damage.
I hate to stop this here. It's going to be the last goofy thing because everyone is now yelling out random hacker movies. I'm just curious, what's your favorite quote hacker movie or TV show?
Oh man, favorite's real hard. I mean.
Or just, I have things where, like, my favorite video game changes every day. So
absolutely.
You can pick one. Yeah,
I feel like if I'm talking to a sort of technical crowd, the one that I'm most often surprised that people haven't seen and yell at them to go see immediately is Sneakers.
Yeah, that's why everyone's,
Yep.
Everyone's clamoring for Sneakers.
Yeah, I feel like Hackers is the classic.
Yes.
Sneakers is the one that, like, it's weirdly less known.
And the one that's, like, oddly prophetic is the underrated Will Smith classic Enemy of the State.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if I could self-promote here for a second, then we'll totally get back onto you, because I guarantee you'll hear me repeat this tomorrow during the drunken segment, but little known fact about me, one of the weirdest things that happened to me last year was there was a casting agency involved and they asked me some things and I sent some headshots and I actually have a physical cameo in the season 3 premiere of Mr. Robot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was totally random. I was shocked by it. I'm in the in focus of like every background shot when they go to the hackerspace. So if you ever rewatch that again, you can watch out for that. So anyhow, back to this. I'm just going to ask one or two questions because we have a unique twist here with the phone calls. Well, actually, how about I do this? What's special about this is for the next about 30, possibly 40 minutes, you actually are setting up a call-in line.
Yep. The call-in line live now.
So we're repeating Radio Statler from The Next Hope, where we actually had a call-in line that people from Australia horribly abused. And maybe we'll hear the same people from Australia again. We had Vegemite here earlier.
Perfect.
Yeah, so who knows here. But yes, we actually have a number that you can call in to directly ask questions. So we're still on IRC. We will still read those questions in the IRC. But please call in, ask away. We can stop it anytime, me talking to him about stopping. And the call number, once again, it is, and it's an American number.
U.S. number, 347-474- 8819.
Again, that is 347-474-8819. So yes, please call in, ask questions, and until you ask questions, I'm going to start asking questions here.
Yeah, ask away. Yes. I came prepared to talk about any of the CFAA cases I've worked on or anything else you want to
talk about. Get slowly absorbed into your awesome t-shirt. So yes, the CFAA also, so you said this predates like most... Is modern computing not modern network computing?
It was passed in 1984, so well before any sort of public.
Perfect year.
Right.
Yes, absolutely perfect year. So this was implemented in. What was the immediate repercussions of this being implemented?
So it really didn't do much for the first couple of years.
Okay.
I
was in 87, so I...
Okay,
yeah.
I mean, I was not out of diapers myself for the first few years of this. Oh, hey, we've got a call coming
in. Oh, we
got
a call. Here you go. Come in.
All right, let's... first off, can we hear you on the air?
Oh,
Might need to...
Where's the... Oh, you have the audio cord in?
Audio cord's in.
It's not on the top?
Nope.
Raise the volume?
Let's see.
If you're on the air, please speak up.
Oh, well.
I guess we lost the call.
Lost the call. Okay. But if you can hear this, feel free to call back in.
Yes.
We're still kind of troubleshooting our...
Yep, we're going to be here for a decent amount of time until Giant Xmas decides to do apparently some weird experimental thing later on. Yep. So, so it wasn't affected the first couple of years. When did it start kicking in?
So the first big case that was brought, that was kind of the landmark first criminal use of this law, was... are you familiar with the Morris worm?
Oh, wow. Yes, that takes me
so
back.
So United States versus Morris was the sort of first bellwether case for the CFAA.
And could for people at home who don't know, what happened during the Morris worm?
Sure. So this was, I mean, this is newsworthy, not just as the first sort of well-known use of the CFAA, but also it's one of the first, if not the first, internet worm.
Yes.
This was, I believe Morris was an academic of some sort who had, you know, on the very, very early internet, said, well, you know, what happens if I make a program that self-propagates? And intending, oh, maybe this will go to, like, you know, 10 or 20 people. Turns out it worked a lot better than that. Went to a whole lot more than that. And I think made up at that point in the sort of early internet, made up a significant portion of sort of total internet traffic for, you know, until he realized what had happened and shut down.
I'm starting to notice that there seems to not be much difference between this worm and the algorithms for YouTube.
Funny that, yeah.
in terms of getting undesirable content that you do not want or need, lots and lots of angry Star Wars videos. How did that directly affect when that incident happened?
So it was an interesting case legally because you'd almost be hard pressed to think of a more clear cut situation where someone didn't have any intent to do harm or damage.
Right.
You know, this was about as innocent an act as you could get at that point in time. The conviction went forward. Morris was convicted under the CFAA, and on appeal, the court basically, if I'm remembering right, and to all you listeners out there armed with a computer and Wikipedia, I'm doing this off the top of my head, so, you know, I am fallible. This is not legal advice. I'm not your attorney, all that. Morris was convicted, and on appeal, they said, look, the intent factor here is not about the intent to actually do harm. It's the intentional launching of the code, essentially.
It's basically just because you have the audacity to actually do something
right.
on the internet, you are already screwed.
Right. It's not this kind of sort of everyday language use of the word intent. It's this very sort of specialized legalese application of it.
And which I feel like this law was designed for, because one of the things that I feel kind of related to, maybe not directly, but Kevin Mitnick, whatever you think about him or not, I feel like a lot of the stuff in his trial was less of what he did and more of like we're going to have a lot more of these people. So let's dogpile on him right now so we can set a legal precedent example. So hopefully people don't, was this a similar situation? Do you feel that they were trying to do?
I think so. And I think that's kind of been the logic behind a lot of CFAA prosecution and legislation over the years. It's, you know, even back in the 80s, you know, part of why this predates the modern public internet is... People saw what was coming. They saw that this was going to be a massive thing.
Right,
you had BBSs, you had sort of early network systems. People saw how much potential was there and how much potential there was for harm. So there is a lot of, you know, let's say, quote-unquote example setting going on with CFAA prosecutions. And I think a lot of it sort of dovetails with that sort of hacker hysteria that bubbles up over the years.
So I just wanted to quickly answer something in IRC
here.
Because we do bring in people who are from the convention. In fact, all those people that I brought here are from the convention. Some of them are speakers. Some people are doing. Some of them are doing workshops. But yes, we're going to be doing more potpourri stuff on Saturday and particularly on Sunday. I know it's almost like the last thing before the con, but beaches as a great prerogative of at 6:30 p.m. before we close of doing what's called Hope Circle of Hope, a newbie's hope, where we're literally going to get a bunch of people, this is their first con, and just talk about their experience at their first con. Yes. So after that aside, it's just because I like to call IRC. And remember, we do have a number to call in. So once again, we'll be taking questions from IRC, but we would love to hear all of your beautiful voices out there on Radio Statler. Once again, the call-in number is 347-478-8891. I'm legit about to tweet
8819.
This. Sorry, 8819.
Oh, got another call coming in. Let's see if we got the audio this time. All right, caller, you should be live if we've not fucked up the mics again. But say a few words. Let's see if we can hear you.
Should I turn up the volume directly?
I could also just put them on speakerphone here. It won't be. That's an exciting noise.
That was weird. Okay.
All right, bear with us, whoever's on the line.
Oh, I got it. Sorry. Okay, so when apparently they were doing testing for this system, they turned everything off, and I'm so used to certain things being on. Because I heard the cancellation sound, so yep. I just turned on the exact wire for it. So I'm sorry. Again, so if you can call in again, I promise we should be able to answer at this time. If not, I'm literally going to grab one speakerphone holding up to this mic. But yes, it should work on. I apologize.
Right. Yep, yeah. I think we got the sound figured out. So
yep.
Now you
so once again, that
in.
Number is 347-478-8819. That again is 347-478-8819. Sorry, 347.
Oh, all right, here we go. Let's see if it works this time.
Press 1 to start the call or 2 to decline. The call will start at the beep.
Hello.
I'm not. Hello, I think we got through this time, yes?
Yes, success.
8 million times the charm, speaker.
All right, wonderful. I have a question for Mr. Jennings about the CFAA. In particular, I'm curious how you feel about the law itself, whether you feel that there is anything that could or should be changed, whether it fails to meet any of its goals, to the extent that they're reasonable in any significant way, and how you would go about changing them if you had that opportunity.
Sure. I think the most difficult thing about the CFAA is it's phrased extremely broadly, and that's understandable to a point, because you want to future-proof the law. You don't want to have to pass amendments every 2 years when technology changes. At the same time, it's written so broadly right now that you necessarily rope in a lot of perfectly innocent conduct. You've got terms of service violations, which are a matter of contract law, still on the books in the 4th, 1st, and 11th circuits of the United States, able to create criminal CFAA liability as well as civil. So you've got some active lawsuits challenging this. There's probably the best known as Sandvig v. Sessions, which is the lawsuit that ACLU brought, challenging this for researchers doing housing discrimination work. But until these cases are resolved at a high enough level to set precedent, you have an open question where the way it's phrased right now can very easily sweep in public data scraping, harmless terms of service violations, and often necessary and important security and other research tasks. I think I'm not going to try and legislate live on air. That's a little ambitious.
That's Theo's department. Bring him on the spot.
But I think the problem is you don't have any statutory language that actually protects harmless conduct or research conduct. And I don't think you've got other examples in the law where you have crafted those carve outs. The answer from DOJ every time this comes up has more or less been, we're the government, trust us. We have prosecutorial discretion, and we're only going to go after the cases that matter. And the fact is, the historical record doesn't play that out. They've gone after countless researchers and countless acts that are largely victimless. So I think that's the biggest thing that you would need to change to have a law that worked the way that I think the CFAA is really intended to.
Did that answer your question?
It absolutely does. Thank you very much.
Lovely.
Thank you. Nice to know that our callers have way better voices than I do. You guys love that. Do me any turn. Once again, if you want to call in live and ask a question, that call in number, and I swear I'm going to get it right despite I haven't been drinking at all today, believe it or not, is 347 404-774-8819. Did I do that right?
Yep. And just to note, because I see some folks on the IRC are saying that they got a went to voicemail message. I cannot conference call on this.
Yes,
so if someone is on the line,
it's one at a time. Like know. It's like off the hook.
Yep.
Yep. So until we get a new call, I'm gonna play a little bit of devil's advocate here for a little bit. How would you define the difference? Let's say we were going to attempt to rewrite this wall. Mm-hmm. I'm a senator from New Jersey because I live in New Jersey,
sure.
or Nebraska, or in Guam. How do you define what constitutes as an intent that was harmless, an intention that may mm-hmm. or was fully intended to cause harm? Because we live in a nation where, unfortunately, people who have dime bags of weed are sentenced more horribly than a woman who, I don't know if you read about this news, who noosed a infant.
I did see that headline,
so
yeah.
How do you determine the moral lines on that?
Well, and this is one of those, ever-present questions when we talk about the law, because obviously, we can't reach into someone's head and know subjectively whether what their intents were.
Mm.
The law generally, when it's looking at what causes harm and what's harmless, does one of two things. It looks at what harm was actually done,
mm-hmm.
or it looks at what harm the person intended and sort of took tangible steps towards causing.
Right.
The way the CFA was originally been structured mm-hmm. and is that you've got minimum loss and damage requirements.
Mm.
So as a matter of law, if it is, if I break into your computer and I take $4,999 worth of data, however, mm-hmm. However your legal experts fight and define that amount,
mm-hmm.
that's still a misdemeanor under the CFAA, mm-hmm. but it's not a felony. There's a $5,000 minimum loss or damage requirement. We've got another call, so I'm going to take that,
call,
and I'll
so
get back to
here.
That question.
Press 1 to start the call or 2 to decline. The call will
right.
start at the beep.
Hello, you are live on the air.
Hi. Greetings from the Netherlands, by the way.
Oh, hello.
I actually...
Yeah. Let me mute it. Let me mute the stream real quick. Yeah, I have a question indeed. You were talking about the CFAA. I seem to recall something about Aaron Swartz that they were trying to put on an amendment regarding what happened to Aaron Swartz
yes,
in mm-hmm. what was it again, 2015 or something like that. I seem to recall that they didn't get that amendment through. Do you think that's going to happen, that they're going to try again or something like that?
So what you're talking about is an amendment called Aaron's Law, and I think it was first proposed in 2013, shortly after Mr. Schwartz
yeah.
committed suicide, in the face of CFAA charges up in the First Circuit in Boston. And it's in that sort of legislative limbo that often means, practically speaking, that these laws are not going anywhere. But it is still, quote-unquote, in committee. It is still an amendment that could be pushed through at this point, if I'm remembering correctly. And it's not the only call to reform the CFAA. The thing that concerns me is, since 2013, a lot of the proposals for CFAA amendments have been about making it harsher or adding things like, there was a recent one called the ACDC Act that was proposing adding a carve-out to give limited immunity to certain types of quote-unquote hacking back activity for attribution purposes. So, I would like to be optimistic. I think there, Aaron's Law is a good example of reform to this law that would solve a lot of the biggest issues with it. But, I think where the political will is right now and the sort of political climate around hacking especially, that hysteria has, if anything, gotten worse since Aaron's Law was introduced, not better.
Does that answer your question, sir?
Yeah, no, that answers my question. Yes, thank you very much.
Awesome.
No problem. Thank
and,
you for calling in.
Thank you, caller. And also just a note.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
I have a friend in Malijn who lives in the Netherlands, so I know Netherlands is a big area, but hopefully you two meet and say hi. I'm going to further on questions. And once again, if you want to call and ask a question, that call number is 347-474-8819. I'm doing a talk later on Radio Statler at 10 p.m. called Hacking the Naughty Bits. And a lot of what we're going to be talking about is the recent FOSTA-SESTA that came up too. does this CFAA law in any way compound onto that law, or do you think there might be intended butterfly effects between those two?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't know that you have direct butterfly effects. Mm. In a lot of situations, the CFAA ends up being used as sort of an additional claim.
Mm.
So you could certainly have a situation where, you know, you have a CESTA or FOSTA type issue mm-hmm. as well as a CFAA claim.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's sort of a symptom or indicator of just how broad the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act is and how widely it can be used. But you know, you don't have sort of exact overlap with the two. Mm. There are certain situations where both could apply.
The exact way that I kind of see it is even not just an overlap, but to me more of just an extension of that kind of sort of thinking of just
I see what you're saying.
Death starring something down. It's like we want to target mm-hmm. this, so we're going to use this kind of spook background in order to slice right through to that.
No, absolutely. And I think there is a lot of similarity between the two in terms mm-hmm. of how they justify their breadth and reach yeah. in that way, and the way that they endanger sort of perfectly harmless, innocent, or even necessary parts of the
internet. So what's been the biggest, most impactful case so far involving the CFAA claim?
Oh,
I know, I don't ask any of the easy questions.
No,
on radio
that's a wonderfully hard question. Yeah. There have been a lot of cases that have moved that law significantly, and several in the last 2 or 3 years.
Compounding on top of it or attempting to break it?
The kind of broad stroke oversimplification of the history of Computer Fraud and Abuse Act cases
mm-hmm.
has been courts struggling with how do we define these very vague terms.
Yeah.
You know, what is unauthorized access mean? What is exceeding authorized access?
Even just what is a computer, considering
a computer,
all the devices we have now.
What's damage?
Yeah.
The funny thing is, computer is defined in the statute.
Yeah, that's why I brought that up, because
yep.
it does have a definition here.
And
but
I've had cases where that came up. I can tell an interesting story a little mm-hmm. bit later about that.
I have gaming stories that kind of put that in that
but
definition.
Yeah, it's defined very broadly in the statute, and my favorite bits of trivia about the statutory definition are... it is broad enough to encompass the human brain, and it is broad enough to encompass a data center itself, not the computers within that center.
So what you're saying is, to pull off the ultimate crime, we need a data center made out of human brains.
Yes, we need a data center
yes.
full of biocomputers.
Hope 2020.
We'll there
we go.
Set, good goals.
So I'm going to ask another dumb question, but I like asking dumb questions to kind of further a natural narrative here. We're in 2018. Why? Okay, I know the answer. We've had Bush, Obama, and especially Trump. Why are we still keeping such an antiquated law around?
So it has been updated several times.
Okay.
Most recently, it was amended in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Before then, there have been a few amendments. Probably the most sweeping of them was parceled with the passage of the USA Patriot Act in 2001. Mm-hmm. So it has been updated. That's the good news. The mm-hmm. bad news is most of these updates have made it more broad-reaching, more
worse.
Flexible, worse for people like you and me doing mm-hmm. security research. I think the biggest thing that hasn't changed, we were talking about this before, where you mm-hmm. have this quote-unquote control factor of the damage and loss threshold, where if it's less than $5,000, it's at
yeah.
best a kind of low-level whatever
yeah.
crime. That number hasn't changed since the 90s, maybe the 80s.
Wow.
And as you may be aware...
Yeah, I've never seen $5,000 in my life, so wow.
But if you think about the like hourly rate that mm-hmm. a security consulting service or mm-hmm. someone like CrowdStrike charges mm-hmm. for an incident response,
yeah.
you know, what was a small fortune in 1984 is now... you know, 20 minutes of a CrowdStrike team working incident response.
Right.
And that is the type of thing that... certainly counts for CFAA loss.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the things that hasn't changed that really should mm-hmm. is you have this threshold that was maybe sufficient in the 80s, but between inflation and the changing market of cybersecurity, now is pocket change for a lot of these acts.
Mm. So I know that when particularly, even if it has positives and negatives, is not liked in computing, never mind the hacking community, you're going to get a couple of people who are going to let you know that they do not think this is a good idea. Who has been out there trying to lessen the amendments or even attempt to abolish this or reformat it, and what's that whole scene been like?
Are you talking about people sort of pushing for amendments, like things to make the CFA more lenient or more like...
Exactly.
Yeah. EFF does a lot of great work on this front. The ACLU has brought this lawsuit that I mentioned before. They're probably the two main groups that I can think of doing sort of advocacy level or you know, appellate sort of amicus brief level work on this law.
So any political figures, hopefully?
There have been a few. Senator Wyden has been a proponent. I mean, if you pull up Aaron's Law, there is a list of people who either co-sponsored
right.
or signed on.
I've heard that. And for people at home, can you do a quick thing about what Aaron's Law is?
Like someone asked about this before. Aaron's Law was a proposed amendment to the CFAA that was following sort of shortly in the wake after Aaron Swartz's suicide.
Proposing, RIP, rest in peace.
Indeed. Proposing changes to make that law... you know, a little more amenable to research activities.
We might be getting calls soon, but I'm still going to ask questions. What kind of changes were you asking for?
You know, I don't have the text of Aaron's Law in front of me in my head, so I don't know the exact details right now.
Maybe a better question. If you were given this law and you could be like, okay, minor amendment just to make it more lenient, what would be your first thing to add on to that?
I think the very first thing, and I think also the most sort of politically palatable thing, is to raise the damage and loss threshold. Because that means that you still have a legal sort of lever to go after low-dollar hacking if you really want to. And you've adjusted the threshold to be sort of more appropriate to today's market. You know, what was $5,000 in the 1980s. Was a much higher bar.
Because I'm unfortunately very unfamiliar with this type of law. I know I'm DEF CON 201 is a subsection of the EFF known as the EFA. I'm terrible at this, but we do fight for a lot of the rights that not only just the EFF, because we've disagreed with the EFF before. We've actually helped them correct some things in the past. Is there any definition of, again, when we talk about damage, what like type of data? Because I think that's very important when trying to assess these types
of damages.
Absolutely.
So yes, these are, when I say loss and damage, these are both defined terms in the CFA. And the real short version is that loss is basically your incident response costs. So costs of response, of investigation.
Right.
It's, you know, if I have to hire a multi-million-dollar incident response team, that probably counts. If I decide afterwards that I need to buy, you know, 16 new enterprise-level firewalls, that probably doesn't. Most circuits that have had to deal with the question have said, no, you don't get to upgrade your system on the hacker's, you know, restitution budget. Damage is much more broadly defined, and this one I'm going
to
pull up.
Also, because in terms of that, it's like it's kind of hard to calculate because you don't always know your full extent to what threat you're going to encounter or how in-depth or, as we would say, old-school, what level they're sort of at or even what they're trying to obtain initially, so it's hard to calculate.
So the damage definition is a great example of how broadly this law is written in an attempt to kind of be future-proof or flexible. Damage is defined under 1030E8 as any impairment to the integrity or availability of data, a program, a system, or information. And you've got courts that have said that, well, impairment means anything that makes it more difficult to get to or knocks it offline, even temporarily. So what
you could potentially be saying is that, for example, even though they're cool people, it's going to be kind of a joke, but I want to make a point here, that Pornhub, with its terabytes and terabytes of all sorts of porn that people want to see and some things people don't want to see, could, since that's their band brother, that if something happened with some sort of data breach in that where they've shut down the access to it or erased whatever on their servers or their backups for that, that they could officially potentially classify that as damage, so thus the porn data would actually technically have integrity.
Right.
Under that legal definition.
Essentially.
Like, it's kind of a joke, but that's actually how you could read it.
Probably the most concerning example of the application of that law that I've personally dealt with was I had a case out in Minnesota where they had charged unauthorized damage in the CFAA. The fact pattern was the person was accused of having done something to a set of network switches that required them to be rebooted. And they found that, you know, the court found that that act of sysadmins having to go in and, you know, physically reboot these servers, a process that took probably about 40 minutes total with no actual downtime because they're redundant
an
systems.
Hour. Yeah.
You know, these are paired switches, so they take one down, the other one's fully fine.
Yep, it just runs through.
Zero downtime whatsoever, zero moments when they were unable to access the data other than the inability to get into the admin accounts on these switches.
Mm.
They still counted that as an impairment of the integrity of that data.
Really?
Yep.
How did they manage to do the word salad for that?
They didn't need to. That in that particular circuit, you had case law saying pretty clearly, you know, hard emphasis on any impairment. So court says, well, that was some impairment. Mm-hmm. That counts as any.
That's insane, because to use kind of a possibly bad analogy in my limited background at healthcare, that would be, to me, like having the flu, and so you have multiple systems, including coughing, and even though you have the flu virus and you're coughing beforehand, that the medical team classifies that you just simply have an average dust cough, even though you actually are sick with something.
Yeah.
It's like, that really shows you kind of how, despite them trying to future-proof this, how broken this can easily be and how malleable you could apply it.
Absolutely, and I think that's where things like the sort of DOJ line of, well, prosecutorial discretion will save us, mm-hmm. fall short. If you have a law that's this broadly worded.
So we have a little bit more time, and then Johnny's going to entertain everyone.
Excellent.
Because that's what he does besides looking handsome and making sure I don't crash servers. Where do you think the future of CFAA is going to go here? I know that's kind of a tricky question to ask, but... Whoop, do we... That?
Oh, nope, that was
okay.
Not a
okay,
call.
Do one more reminder. We're actually maybe going to get one in soon,
trying.
But yes, someone's trying. You can do it!
That's weird.
We believe in you. Yeah, and for some reason, if it keeps failing, just...
Yeah, give it one more try,
you can,
and if not,
just
pop
ask
the IRC
right directly
there.
In IRC. Yep. I'm also just glad that you're in IRC. It's like, you know what it is.
Yeah,
a lot of people don't use it anymore, but I use it all the time. And
it's been really, it's been an interesting space to be a technically savvy lawyer.
Yeah. Especially since now you can run it over Tor.
Right.
Yeah, right? Reason new life. But yeah, I know it's a tricky question to ask, but where do you see this going eventually, type of stuff going on now?
I would love to have like a happy, cheery answer to that.
This is Circle of Hope. We don't have happy answers
okay,
for
good.
Anything.
Good, because the... Okay. You know, I think with sort of the current buildup of hacker hysteria in the wake of the 2016 elections and, you know, all of these sort of large headline-grabbing data breaches and, you know, sort of the Sony hacks and Equifaxes.
Okay. Which one?
I've lost count at this point.
I know.
I would not describe us as in an environment where that sort of scary image of the stock photo hacker with the balaclava coming out of your keyboard is going away anytime soon.
Yeah, it's my day job.
Right, and I think that what we're going to see is this is going to get worse before it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to the extent that I have bits of rays of hope that we'll walk that back some, it is... Mm-hmm. You know, we've had, I think of, for example, Lori Love's case in...
Yes.
I mean, his charges were here, but he's over in the UK.
Right.
And full disclosure, he's one of my clients, so I'm entirely biased here. But, you know, one of the big factors in their determining not to extradite Larry was just how much more harshly these acts are treated here than in the UK.
Mm.
You know, what he was accused of in the UK would be a pretty minimal sort of slap on the wrist situation, whereas here... You're looking at three different indictments across three different districts with a total of well over 90 years in prison, potentially. And, you know, I think there is a degree of political pressure both internationally and domestically here to say, look, when you're talking about a law with this much breadth, where in at least three different circuits, you know, the letters of a terms of service agreement could determine whether someone's going to jail or not,
right.
There's pretty decent pressure out there to push back and say, no, this is... We need to make this less harsh if it's going to be this broad.
And, you know, even though I feel like one of the trends that we're probably going to see in the next decade or two is we're kind of losing power in a lot of areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like the United States right now is we've turned 20.
We've got a call coming in.
All right, screw me. Here we go.
Press 1 to start the call or 2. The call will start at the beep.
Hello, you are on the air.
Yay, Citadel's finally here. Party time, best party in the world. Woo!
Are you drinking as much as we are?
I am super happy to be here.
Oh, good.
Awesome.
Good to have you here.
Did you have a question for us, or did you want to just let us know how happy you were?
I don't know what to say.
Okay.
All
well,
right.
I'm glad that you're happy listening
yeah.
to Radio Statler, and
in.
I hope you stick around. We have a
I'm sorry I wasn't able to call in on my landline that I had just rewired into this room just for this very event. After listening to the Off the Hook radio show, I wanted to demo out my LSDJ cartridge. I have the actual Game Boy hardware from Hong Kong that allows me to reprogram cartridges. I did pay the author of the maker, whoever created LSDJ, and I have his original cartridge. And it's really fun to demo this equipment out, to be able to program something for equipment that isn't just a PC and have it come alive in your hand.
That's super cool.
That's
I just want to let you know that if you're going to be listening to Rhea Statler all day on Saturday at 8 p.m., we're going to have Vi over here. He's going to be talking about hacking 8-bit architecture. I believe Johnny X was interviewing with that. And then on 4 p.m., I'm going to have this whole round table thing, 5 p.m., called Where Are the Video Games, which is about video games and hacking and where those intersect. So
that's excellent.
If you want, it's not full chip tunes, but if you want to learn like cool bit stuff, we can do that, and I'm going to be out here in about 3 minutes. So yes, thank you for calling in,
yeah.
And I hope you're having a wonderful time here at Radio Statler.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What? So I guess one final question here as we get set up is that, because as you said, you know, you're like, oh, don't be depressing here, but you know, first step in solving a problem is meaning there's a problem.
Absolutely.
So here's how we could do Ray of Hope here as, I might have to jump on a little bit of that and eventually. You say you didn't have cat ears. Your headphones.
No.
We've read that in IRC because it's hilarious. Thank you, by the way. Pre-gaming here.
Yeah.
Yes. So, again, we now know what the problem is. Here's where the hope comes in. What can people, especially in the United States, because, again, even though we're slipping on power, we influence a lot of things, so what we do can also still impact them globally. What can we do as citizens to help improve and fight against the misuse of this act?
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's the trite but true statement of talk to your representatives. Keep pressing for changes in the legislation. The other thing that you can do is, you know, when you're aware of, you know, when EFF or someone mentions a case out there where this seems like a broad overreach or overapplication of the law, you know, got another call coming in.
Okay, one last call here,
one
real quick.
Last call,
and then we're getting
the
fuck out of here.
To decline, the call will start at the beep.
All right, here we go.
Hello, caller. Are you
Hello,
on the
you're
air?
On the air.
Hi, we're just tuning in, so sorry that we haven't heard what's been going on. I'm here with a 1L from UChicago.
Okay.
He's wondering how to get your job.
Yeah, basically.
Oh,
You can't have it, it's his.
No, I mean, I would love to have more people in this space. There's honestly very few sort of technically savvy lawyers doing, you know, CFAA, criminal defense, and, I mean... Drop me an email, honestly.
Do you mind picture?
No, take a picture, that's fine.
Do you have any other questions, Kyle?
No, that was good.
Yeah. That was good. Alright, thank you.
All right.
Keep it up.
Yes, thank you so much. And for also everyone out there, just in case you want to know, if you ever want to get Side Pockets job, just don't do anything and eat lots of cheeseburgers. Doesn't matter what type of cheeseburgers, just eat a lot of them. So yes, and what's the one last
thing? I think the first, you know, trite but true thing is talk to your representatives, keep that pressure up to change this law, and when new amendments that make it worse come out, we have seen success. There was that law down in Georgia that was going to be a state-level computer crime law that, by its terms, would have outlawed anything that was not explicit permission-granted research.
Yep. No
and,
porn, no cats you know, on the internet, just, yeah.
Right. The security community spoke up. They wrote letters in to that legislature and said, look, this is a disaster. You need to stop it. And look, they stopped it. That was vetoed.
Yes. So we have power.
You
here.
Have power.
Still.
And I think, you know, these legislators, they're not dumb. They realize that they don't know computers the way that the community does.
Yeah.
And so they will listen to experts write in and say, look, this is what the law you're creating is going to do. So keep that pressure up. Keep that pressure up also when you hear about some huge overreach of the CFA, with people like Aaron Swartz or political actors who are being targeted with this. Same thing. Talk to your representatives. Say, look, here's what's happening in your district, what your prosecutors are doing. Mm-hmm. Tell them to stop. And, you know, they don't have binding power there, but they have pressure. They have political power.
So I feel like it's kind of the theme here for Hope, Hope here is we... Well, spilling your drinks,
yeah,
but also,
drink
yes, share all the drinks. No, but also is, yeah, I know that stuff has a nice kick to it, is that get the politic.
Yeah.
Actually get political. I know it's a dirty word, but get political. Make hackers political again. So once again, like, this was amazing. I am so glad for this effect. If you can actually somehow bring this number back on when we do Crazy Boozy Night, if you can make it, I would love to take it. Because I remember a long time ago we did this and it was like a disaster, but this has been, you guys are amazing. I'm the toddler by comparison here. So yes, thank you for giving us this insight. So,
No problem.
I just also want to shout out to thank Night Owl for introducing
that too,
us in
yeah.
and bringing him on. And if you're interested in what that crazy man's up to, he's going to have a show at 2 a.m. today at 26 o'clock. And he's also going to have that again Saturday night, Sunday morning. 2 a.m. Eastern Standard Time,
excellent.
Which is 26 o'clock.
So
yes.
Thank you again for having me. If you have follow-up questions, you can find me on Twitter at Esquiring. Mm-hmm. You can email my work account at fred@toreckland.com.
All the porn.
And I am happy to answer any CFAA questions you have.
Yep.
They may not be as free as this last hour has been.
All right.
So thanks for having
me. Thank you for your time, and enjoy the rest of Hope.
Thank you very much.